I'm Confucius, and you are now listening to The Breaks Podcast. These are highlights from our Saturday night hip-hop show on KUTX 989 in Austin, Texas. My co-host Fresh and I are native Austinites, and we love talking hip-hop, Texas hip-hop, hip-hop history, and what's going on right now. And just so you know, the opinions expressed in this podcast are our own and do not necessarily reflect the position of KUTX Austin.
We here to take over the airways, no matter where you're from or where you stay.
So, you know, in our week off, the biggest news I can think of happening is your boy Tory Lanez putting out an album.
Now he's my boy.
I mean, you the one said you like his music at first. Remember we did the guest DJ and you were like, I like Tory Lanez.
I did. I mean, I like the music, but since then, don't act like my tune has not changed.
So if you don't already know, to bring you up to date, Tory Lanez is alleged to have shot Megan Thee Stallion in the foot during an altercation in L.A., what, a couple months back?
Mm-hmm.
Tory has not said anything. Has been radio silent since the incident. Megan has, you know, come out and said that he did it. So Tory finally decided to break his silence. He sent out a tweet saying, you know, I'm finally going to, you know, say what I got to say at, you know, 11 o'clock Pacific time. And, of course, everybody was like, oh, he's going to get on IG and do his best Tekashi impression and start running his mouth. But our friend O, a friend of the show, obviously, pointed out when Tory tweeted, like, 11 o'clock is when, you know, new songs come out on Thursdays on streaming services. And so, and then everybody else on the internet started picking up, like, it looks like a time something's coming out. Sure enough, Tory Lanez released something. Not only did he release music, he released an album, an entire album addressing the incident. Well, whatever you call it, what he did with that album. The album became number one. After it was called, what, Daystar, which is his real name?
Yeah, his actual name, yeah.
Yeah, it became number one after its release. Granted, I don't want to say it became number one because people really like Tory. I think it became number one because people were nosy.
Mm-hmm.
Because it's not number one anymore. But, yeah, and also he had a music video come out today. Was it today or yesterday? Yeah.
I think it was yesterday.
From the album. Immediately after he put out the album, majority of the internet, at least from my internet timeline and the articles I read, were asking, what the hell is he thinking? Like, sir. I didn't listen to the album because why? But I did listen to clips of it because, you know, just to have something to talk about on the show. He did mention on there how, you know, he didn't do it. He tried to say that how did you get shot but it missed any bones, which once again, Tory, you're an idiot. He also mentioned he wanting her back. He mentioned people trying to blackball him. He mentioned Jay-Z, which is just extremely stupid.
Ask Chris Brown how that went.
That's what I'm saying. Chris Brown didn't even mention Jay-Z and had to wait some years to get up from under him. Like, he threw shots at Bun B because Bun B spoke out in, you know, defense of Megan. He mentioned Kehlani and JoJo. Didn't mention Maxo Cream, though.
I was about to say that. He didn't mention Maxo, though.
Didn't mention Maxo. I don't know what drugs Tory Lanez is doing. I'm pretty sure at some point down the line we'll hear that he was heavily under the influence when he starts copping pleas. But, yeah, all bad.
You know, man, what I want to say about the dude, I can't say because we are a family show. But what was he thinking? What was him and his team thinking? Like, I just, like, because my thing is, I always bring his team into it because regardless of him being independent or assigned to a label or not, he has a team. He has management. He has a publicist. That means y'all sat down and strategized this. Y'all knew he had this album coming. More than likely, y'all knew he was recording. Y'all knew he wanted to drop this and when he wanted to drop this. Nobody in the room said, yo, this may not bode over well, bro. Like, this is not the best thing that we should do to address this incident. And then it's just like, I didn't listen to the album. I just wasn't going to listen to it. But like your timeline, my socials were on fire. from it, and clips floated around, and I heard some of the clips. I heard the same things that you heard, and I also started reading all the articles that came out after it, like Complex saying how it was just horrible that he released the album, and how they obtained documentation from, I think, Cedar Sinai in L.A., the hospital that Megan went to, and had shrapnel removed, which, for those that don't know what shrapnel is, that means that it's, that came from the bullet that had entered the heel of her foot. So he did shoot her. She was, in fact, shot. And, in fact, shot in her foot. And I think everybody was thinking that, like, she was shot at the, he just aimed and shot at the top of her foot. And we were supposed to see some big gaping bullet hole in her foot. And so that Tory, is how you don't break any bones or tendons if you are shot in your foot, since you are the expert medical examiner all of a sudden. Like, I didn't get it. Like, you say you didn't shoot her. Then on the other hand, you say you wanted her back and you was down for her and you in love with her and all of this. And I found it really funny that he did address his height. Like, nobody cares, Tory. Whether you're 5'7 or you're 5'3, bro, you're short. I'm 5'7. You're short. It doesn't matter, bro. You're short. Let it go. And it really just sounds like you got little man syndrome.
Yeah.
Like, it's just.
Some of the blogs I follow have, they're saying, like, what people don't know is that Tory does have a temper. And I thought about it. I've seen videos of him, like, popping off on fans and stealing off on them. And
I've heard about it. Since he's been an artist.
Of him, like, confronting Travis Scott and just yelling and, like, on his tiptoes and, like, okay, like, he, you know, this, I've been seeing so many people, like, try to, like, online, not like people I follow, just like personalities, try to find some type of reasoning as to why Tory did it, or try to give him some kind of justification. There's this lawyer, I don't know who that guy is. Well, he says he's a lawyer. He was trying to say that Tory would be an idiot to say he didn't do it. If he did do it, so he believes that Tory didn't do it because, you know, he was going off these legal terms like, oh, you know, if he's talking to the, if his lawyers talk to the DA, they're obviously trying to see what charges might be pressed. And Tory, if he's smart, he's going to say that if he was really stupid, he'd say he didn't do it, even though if he did. I'm just thinking to myself, like, Megan, granted, if let's say Megan is lying. Let's say Megan is, like, really, really just lying about everything that happened. It's the fact that a gun was brought into play that I just can't get past. Like, the only way, once again, there's only two ways I can see Tory being completely absolved of all this. If Megan had a gun on her, which Tory didn't mention and Megan did not say it, or two, she pulled the gun out and he grabbed it out of her hand, which Tory didn't mention that happening. And right now at this point, with the album coming out, Tory never mentioned any other point of Megan having, you know, a gun or grabbing the gun. Because, once again, if it was me, I'd have been said that. If I didn't do it, oh, yeah, you would have heard me the minute it happened. Like, nah, bro, that's not me. I didn't shoot anybody. But, yeah, there's really no justification for it. And if you're defending that, you're just trash. Like,
Yeah. I mean, I've been seeing, not people I per se know or follow, but just people like you on the internet, black men trying to, like, find a justification. Oh, well, she was yelling, and, you know, she got a history of being, she was drunk and yelling. So that means she needs to be shot or a gun needs to be pulled out. Like you said, let's just say that she's being untruthful. If she was drunk and irate and berating him, that means that you should pull a gun out and shoot her? Because your ego is now bruised. Like, no, bro. Like, come on. Half of y'all get yelled at by somebody on 6th Street and y'all don't pull a gun out. So, like, y'all sitting here telling me that this woman deserved to be shot because Tory was defending himself from being yelled at. Like, nah, like, y'all are just sad and y'all mothers need to slap y'all. I'm just sorry. Or your mother wasn't hugging you as a child or something, or whoever will take care of you. And I mean that from the bottom of my heart, because, like, if that's the case, like, if y'all trying to find all of this justification as to why he may have pulled out a gun and why he pulled out a gun and shot a woman, like, an unarmed woman, like, bro, come on now. Like, y'all, like, that's sick. Who raised you? Where are you from? Because, like, where I'm from, that's just, like, you just weak. You were just a weak man. Like, one, you already a weak man for needing to have a gun there with two women in the car, and a bodyguard. And then two, you decided to pull it out and then fire it at the woman. And everything I'm hearing now that's being reported about some source coming out and stuff that Tory said before he shot her and all this other stuff, like, yo, bro, we send him back to Canada. Send him back to Canada, man. Like, that dude is sick, and get him the help that he needs.
Yeah, it's just, like I said, just putting out that album was just so distasteful. I'm like, when he made the announcement, I was telling him, I was like, yo, I think it's a song. Because we were assuming, you know, if it was any music, it was going to be a song. I kept thinking to myself, he can't be this stupid. Like, there's no way. His team.
I definitely was thinking
and
that.
Him cannot be this stupid. His manager deleted his Twitter and made his Instagram private. I tried to look. I said, "Is he gonna? You know, Sasha gonna say anything about this?" But he silenced himself. Like, y'all, there's no way Tory's.
He's not a fool.
Like, there's no way Tory's really gonna put out a song, and it ended up being an album. Like, I don't think I realized it was an album until later on, because a lot of the DSPs blacklisted the album. Like, you have to like really, really search for it to find it.
Mm-hmm. I think only Apple Music had it, because when I looked for it on. Well, I didn't even look for it. Somebody screenshot it and was like, Spotify said, like, no. And then another person had screenshot it. Tidal was like, no. And I expected Tidal to do it, but seeing how Megan is managed by Roc Nation, Jay-Z, Tidal, Tory said something about him. So, like, dude, you was only on one streaming service. So, I mean, so was he number one in the country or number one on iTunes? Because I don't really count number one on iTunes. I really don't count number one on iTunes. But, like, I didn't realize it was a full album until, like, as the night went on and I kept reading tweets and people was like, oh, no, it's an album. He put out a whole album, a whole mixtape. And I was just like, really? And it was like 20 songs. Then I think he tried to go for the whole sympathy route and say, like, the album was released on the day that his mother died. Condolences and sorry for your loss of your mother. I can't imagine what it's like to feel. Can't imagine what it's like to lose a parent, let alone my mother. But your mother would be ashamed, bruh, if she was that you shot a woman. You think your mother would be happy about that, bro? And you said nothing about it for like a month and a half, 2 months. You just sat there, and then you decided that the way you wanted to address it was through the music. And I'm sure that's what he was sitting there thinking, was like, oh, well, you know, I'm not gonna say nothing. I'm just gonna talk about it through the music and let them hear it through the music. Nah, man, we passed. This is not the time for us to just like get over it because the music sounded good. And I saw people on there talking about, man, he really spitting, and that. Also being coupled with the announcement about the Breonna Taylor case, it just was in bad taste, and it just didn't look good. Like, it's like you took nothing into consideration, and you were only just looking at your ego and how you felt and your streams and your money, and that's all that mattered.
Yeah. I don't know. Like, you know, a lot of people I've seen compared to the Chris Brown and Rihanna incident. The difference between these two cases is, one, Chris Brown and Rihanna were way younger. That's not an excuse, but they were like, I don't even think they were in there over 21 when Chris Brown and Rihanna happened. Chris Brown spent a lot of time trying to, you know, reconcile what he did and, you know, ask for forgiveness. And, you know, he went on that press tour. He went to jail for it. Like, you know, he's been open about the fact that he regrets it and how, you know, the mistake he made. And that's not, once again, not giving excuses to him. But, you know, Chris Brown's been very contrite about what happened. Chris Brown had dropped an album 2 months later saying it's Rihanna's fault. Like, she should have done this to me.
She lied. Like, she lied. He didn't drop an album 2 months later or do a song or get on the stage and say, Rihanna lied on me. Her team made up this whole story to try to belittle me, or they out to get down. like they're trying to bring me down because I got my master's. Apparently, and that's also what I was hearing is that.
Yeah, he got his master's back.
Yeah, he got his master's, so they were. I was like, bro, if that's the case, they could come after Chris Brown and Future and everybody else in the industry that owns their master's. Stop it, bro. Stop it. And you shot a woman.
Yeah, that's also the bigger difference. Is
like,
that
you
Chris
shot
Brown
an unarmed woman. You shot it wasn't like a Mexican standoff or nothing. Like, you shot a woman.
That's my thing too. Like, people saw the video, like, after, like, her, of Megan walking out of the car limping with blood on the trail of blood behind her. So it's not like, you know, this is some space. There was a gun. There was Tory on the ground flapping his arms. The cops came. Like, like, yeah, wild.
Like, it's just, I don't know, man. Dude is, in my book, in my opinion, dude is done. Dude is done, man. Like,
I mean, done as much as he can be. He still have fans. So
I mean, yeah, he's still going to have them because there are those that was like, the music is good. I'm still going to listen. I can see, I can look past all that and just see the artists and the music. But I just feel like, man, we did that for nearly three decades with R. Kelly before we decided to just say, hey, yo, this dude is sick. Like, we, like, now we going, like, people, y'all still don't get it? Like, it's something wrong with these gentlemen, man.
But there's been, like I've said before, hip-hop needs a reckoning. Because hip-hop has let a lot of stuff slide when it comes to its treatment of women and, you know, misogyny. So hip-hop needs a Me Too movement like yesterday. Yeah, I'm a fan of art. I'm not going to be on here saying that rappers need to stop saying the B word. I'm not going to go that route or nothing like that. But there's things that male rappers do in regards to women that needs to be discussed. Just black music, period. Like R&B, like you said, R. Kelly was just chugging along for like 30 years. Nobody said anything. I mean, nobody stopped him. So
even with R. Kelly, like you said, we chugged on for like three decades. Even after we had knew about the marriage to Aaliyah, and even after him admitting the marriage to Aaliyah when she was 15, like you said, black music kind of just needs the reckoning because we are very forgiving of our celebrities. We let a lot of things slide. Dudes do all of these horrible things towards women and say all these things towards women, and then we just like, oh, you know, it's just music. It's cool, man. You know, we're gonna keep on rocking, man. He probably really not like that. He married though. I mean, I don't think he really be doing believing all that. He married. That don't mean that the man isn't misogynistic because he's married. That negates nothing.
Okay, and I get, you know, I'll say this and we can, you know, let it go. I get sometimes why, as black people, we're very hesitant to try to condemn another black person because of the persecution we already face from this country as a whole. So we're very like, nah, I'm not trying to jump on that bandwagon and bring somebody down when they already got to deal with so much other stuff. But man, if somebody's wrong, they're wrong. Like, I'm not going to defend nobody who's just blatantly wrong. That's not what we're going to do. So, because at some point we got to separate people who are being persecuted for no reason. Like a civil rights leader, or you know, somebody, or a politician, somebody who's actually trying to do right, as opposed to somebody who's just clearly just doing something wrong. Like, no, like if you beat a woman, I'm like, say, well, I don't want to come out against Fresh because, you know, Fresh put his hands because he's a black man. Like, nah, bro, he beat a woman. He's on his own on this one. you got to handle this on your own. So
and I will be all deserving of all the flack and ridicule that I get. So I'm not going to stand here and not speak on a man who shot a woman.
Yeah, like this, y'all, like, I don't want to hear this. I just like the music, all right? His music, you like his music, let him have money to buy that gun to shoot Megan, too, so think about that. So, yeah.
And we gave you Rosa Parks by the great Outkast, who are celebrating an anniversary this week. With equipment, I turning 22 as of Wednesday.
Oh yeah, so we always have conversations about, you know, our love and affinity for Outkast. Is equipment their best? Is that their best album?
I would say yes, me personally. Stankonia was great, but I don't think for me Stankonia doesn't top equipment.
I'm always partial to AT Aliens, which is their second album, only because that is the first album I actually listened to.
That's probably why I feel
really like cemented my love for Outkast. Hey, second show in a row we talked about Outkast. But you know, and listen, I end up listening to Equimini, but I've said this before on the show. AT Aliens is more of Outkast trying to prove to the world, at least the hip hop world, that they're capable MCs. Like, you know, we're not just going to sit up here and say a bunch of Southern stuff. We're going to really show y'all we can rap better than everybody else. But Equimini, I think, was the seminal Outkast album. Like, that's when they came into their own. That's when you started seeing Andre sing, and that's when you start seeing more of the eclectic videos. That's when you start seeing more of the sounds that people more or less know Outkast for. And, I mean, if you read, I used to have, I don't know what it was, a magazine. God, I miss my magazines. That they broke down the making of Equimini. That's, like I said, that was the first album when they stopped recording, Big Boy and Andre stopped recording together. And that's when they kind of started to really just say, like, hey, Like, we've already proven to y'all that we can sell a good amount of records. Let's get in here and really just, you know, become ourselves. So, I think at that time, too, that's when Andre started really breaking off and being really more to himself as well. Because that's when they started getting the separate tour buses. And, you know, Big Boy had the bus with all the people on it, and they were smoking. And Andre was on his bus with the incense and the calming music. And I always talk about that Source magazine I had, that, you know, the dual cover with Jay-Z for Hard Knock Life and Outkast for Equipment Knock. They both came out the same year. 98 was a hard year for albums. It was a whole other topic. And then, you know, they do the interview with Outkast. You know, Andre's whole thing is he's like, I go to the movies by myself and just hang out and like to record my music. Big Boy's like, I'm riding around with all my friends in my cars going to the club and just, you know. But, yeah, Equipment Knock was, yeah. Equipment Knock to me is a perfect album. It's a perfect album.
No argument here. To piggyback off what you said, Equipment Out was the first Outkast album that I heard. And then I went back and heard the first two. And like you said, Equipment Out was the album more or less Outkast became into their own, but they became the Outkast that we know them for. Andre became the Andre 3000 that we know him for. The incredible, prolific rhyme slinger. Like, if you've never heard Equipment Out, then you don't ever talk to me about rap. Just listen to Return of the G and how Andre comes in on that song alone. And that's like, that was the point where Andre started wearing the weird, funny clothes. And I remember the Dungeon Family documentary that's on Netflix. I think it's still on Netflix. Rico Wade, it was like, I think they were at an award show and they were getting ready to perform, and Andre came out on stage, was backstage, and he was coming with the pink furry pants, and Rico looked at him and was like, yo man, you sure this what you want to do? I mean, I'm with you either way, but you sure this what you want to do? And Andre was like, yeah, this me, this what I'm doing. He was like, all right man, let's go get it then. Like, that was the Equimini point in time, was on where Andre decided to, you know, like, even in the Rosa Parks video, he jumped up and had on like the shoulder pads and the fuzzy pants, the rainbow colored fuzzy pants and all of that. So like, like you said, Equipment Out is perfect to me. Like, I don't see an issue or an error or anything wrong with Equipment Out. Like, every song on that album is just beautifully crafted. Like,
it's even wild. Like, you have like a song like West Savannah, which fits the album, like you said, perfectly. But that song was recorded for the first album.
First album, yeah. And one of my favorite Outkast songs.
Like, you know, I mentioned how, you know, AT Aliens was the album where Outkast was trying to prove, like, they belong in the hip-hop conversation and they could really rap well. But Equipment Eye, I would argue they were rapping better than they were on AT Aliens. Andre was unstoppable on Equipment Eye. I think that is the album where people really started saying, like, Andre might be a little different. Like this,
yeah.
Like, Big Boy can rap, but Andre, I don't know, man. This guy here, he's saying some things on this album. Like I said, they were both rapping, because on AT Aliens there was a lot of back and forth. There were some songs where Big Boy was just like Jordan year. Like, this is Jordan in the 96-97 finals. Like, he was just killing it, and Andre was just doing well. But Equipment Eye, that's when you really start saying, like, okay, Andre, I don't know this guy here, man.
That's when you started realizing that Andre, like, he's a unicorn. He's not normal.
Yeah. This is different. This is, like you said, Return of the G and the title track, Equipment Eye. Like, Andre was rapping. I still argue Andre's second verse on Equipment Eye is probably one of the best verses I've ever heard in my life. Like, that's Kobe putting up 81 in that song. That's Kobe putting up. That was top tier. And also, that album also includes, like you said, West Savannah might be one of your favorite Outkast songs, but one of my favorite Outkast songs of all time, Liberation. So, like you have, I mean, you have CeeLo, of course, Outkast, Erykah Badu on one song. Like, this song is hard. That's a Negro spiritual anthem right there.
You scared is on there, which is another one of my favorite Outkast songs. Mamacita, which Andre went crazy and spazzed out on that record as well. Like, The Art of Storytelling Part 1 and 2 are on there.
What other song is on there? We always talk about Scoot on the Barbie.
That was when they got their that was the song that gave woke New York up to Outkast and finally gave New York their praise, because they had Raekwon from
Wu-Tang. Also, shout out to Outkast for having immaculate skits on that album. Immaculate skit. See, back people forget skits, like good skits. Like albums in the 90s had great skits.
Like, actual skits at that, like skits that they had wrote out and rehearsed and went into the studio and recorded.
Yeah. Like you were the one that told me that Killer Mike was one of the people that were buying the CDs from the bootlegger, right?
Yeah.
The skit. I never knew that. I never knew that.
It took me years to realize that.
That still is one of the funniest skits ever on the album. It's like, I got the new Outkast, man. I don't want that, man. First day was some pimps, then it was some genies, and then some aliens. I don't want that.
We got that new Pip Click Gangsta Crick Rattle.
So got that new Goody Mob. Sky, yeah. Sky. Is that what they were saying?
Is that what they saying? Yeah, man. Yeah, man.
So I don't know what that Outkast, man. First they were some genies, then they were some pimps.
Then they was in space, then they were some aliens. I thought they was your boys.
But yeah, that the what was it? The one where Big Boy buys the was it the weed? Said it's coming a plane ticket too.
That must be the $15 plane ticket, huh?
Oh yeah, great album.
That was just an immaculate piece of work.
Yeah, very
classic. Should have went triple.
It what's even crazy is that one thing I'm, and probably because of this album, I'm real big on is sequencing. Like the album flows perfectly. You know, like a lot of people don't, because of streaming and all that, don't really take the time to craft an album, put it together. But you can tell Outkast probably approached it like a movie. Like this, everything has to fit and flow together. And it really does. Like I said, Return of the G is probably the greatest beginning song of any album. Like it just comes in perfectly.
Granted, it's like, not the first song on the album. Hold On, Be Strong, the interlude, is the first song on the album.
But I consider that more of a, like a skit kind of. Because Outkast, I think for all that, except until they got to Love, Speaker Box, Love Below, they used to always have somebody crooning it, some woman singing at the beginning.
True.
And then they jump in. So, yeah, shout out to Equipment Eye, man.
Happy anniversary to Outkast on Equipment Eye turning 22. And that was This Week in Hip Hop History. We'll be right back after this quick break.
And now, ladies and gentlemen, it's time for our second segment of the night, Unpopular Opinion with Mr. Fresh himself.
Yay, yay. Get my West Coast on, Ice Cube, West Coast connection. That's not what the Unpopular Opinion is about, though. So we are in October. So we have, 2 months left within this abysmal year that is 2020. So, since we are a music program, my unpopular. I'm not counting October. This is November, December. That's it. But anyway, since we are a music program, and I try to keep my unpopular opinions in the music range, my unpopular opinion has to obviously do with music. There has been a lot of music albums that have released within 2020. Some you may have forgotten about. And the other day, this blog that I follow, I believe it's called Hip Hop Golden Age, they released a list of the worst albums to drop in 2020, which I disagree with the list. Well, outside of the fact of Blueface, Nav, and Tekashi being on there, those are the only three that I agree with. But like albums like NBA YoungBoy's Top was on there. Who else did they name? PTSD by G Herbo was on there, which I listened to and I thought it was a pretty good album. To say it was one of the worst albums of the year, that's a stretch. Don Toliver's Heaven or Hell was on there, which was a shocker. I agree with their argument of can you classify that as a rap album, but that's a whole argument within itself. But that was probably one of the best albums of the year. And Pop Smoke's debut posthumous album was on there, which I definitely didn't think that deserved to be on there, because with Pop Smoke's Untimely Death and Stephen Victor and 50 Cent working together and piecing that album together as well as they did, and the reception that it received, that definitely wasn't one of the worst rap albums to be released this year. So my unpopular opinion is that the best rap album of the year is by Boldy James and Alchemist with The Price of Tea in China. They just recently released the deluxe album, I think like a month ago of it. But that is the best rap album. Rap album of the year. I know a lot of people are going to be like, Fresh, you're crazy. It's hands down Freddie Gibbs and Alchemist with Alfredo. Yes, that was a great album. But I consider Bodie James the best rap album because I expected nothing less from Freddie Gibbs and Alchemist. Like, Freddie Gibbs has been on fire these last few years. And coming off of Bandana, I expected nothing less because I contend that Freddie Gibbs had the best rap album of 2019. And it probably should have got a Grammy. But I expected nothing less from Freddie Gibbs and Alchemist. I expected that album to be as great as it was, the production to be what it was, the lyrics to be what it was, the sequence of the album to be what it was. But I say Bodie James has the best rap album for the simple fact it's Bodie James. And I say that because Bodie James, a lot of y'all probably didn't know who Bodie James was. And I remember Bodie James from the blog era, being a blog era rapper. And after the blog era really dying, things really getting quiet for him. And things were kind of quiet for Bodie, like, within the blog era. I can't remember the name of the mixtape he put out, but I have it. It's on my external hard drive somewhere if I ever get access to it again. But it was a pretty good tape, and I thought Bodie would be bigger, like, throughout the entire blog era. And he just wasn't. Coming out of Detroit, Big Sean kind of stole the show and became Detroit's rap savior next to Eminem. And Bodie came out and shocked the world with this album with Alchemist. Like, the beats were just incredible. The rhyme schemes and patterns that he used were great. The lyrics were on point. Like I said, that to me was his reintroduction into the rap world. And I kind of wasn't expecting it. I think I saw a clip of it, of one of the songs on Twitter. And I was like, oh, snap, Bodie James got new music out. Like, I'm glad to see he's still rapping. And, like, he's with Alchemist, too. If anything with Alchemist, I'm listening, personally. So I was hyped for the album. I believe it came out in February. And, like, I'm still listening to it to this day and time. Like, right all the way up until now. So that was the best rap album of the year. Like, yeah. And he signed to Griselda, which kind of helps Griselda's argument. And they have one, if not the best camp and rap right now, because West Side Gun just put out Who Made the Sunshine, which is his fourth album this year. Conway put out three already this year, including his debut album, From a King to a God. So, like, and then West Side Gun has two more slated before the end of the year is up, and he officially retires. I don't believe he's retiring because I don't believe rappers retire, with the exception of Joe Budden. But yeah, Bodie James, The Price of Tea in China is the best rap album of the year. If you haven't heard it, go listen to it. You will not be disappointed. And his Versace tape album that was completely produced by Jay Versace is another top album of the year. It's in my top five albums of the year. That's my unpopular opinion. And now it is that time of the show, everyone, where we gain a little bit more wisdom than we had a segment ago. Here we are with Confucius Says, with the one, the only, the man, the myth, the legend, Confucius Jones.
Yeah. So, like I said, we were off last week, so we didn't get a chance to do this yet. I'm pretty sure I heard a rerun of the episode. And by the way, our reruns are amazing. I listened to it myself. I was like, this sounds pretty dope.
You're not supposed to say that.
Oh, yeah. But it wasn't past episode. Anyway.
I mean, yeah, but you're not supposed to say it.
Anyway. So, this, you know, the election coming up in, I think it's less than 60 days. No, less than 30 days. Isn't it? No, a little bit over 30.
A little over
30 days left. It's weird because it seems like it's so far away, but it's so close. Like, make sure you're registered to vote, and all that good stuff. But what I'm going to talk about is, you know, the importance of voting. We now live in a time where, you know, misleading facts, I'm not going to say fake news, misleading facts and just just bad news all around. It spread so fast. And a lot of times people, because of social media, we don't have time to really people don't take the time to research things before it's getting online and saying stupid stuff. When it comes to voting, me being black, I was always taught the importance of politics. My family, they're not super political, but they kept me up to date on what politics, they kept themselves up to date on politics, which in turn I did. My first memory of being interested in politics was the 96 election with Clinton and Bob Dole. I remember staying up and watching the results come in with my mom. I was like nine. I was watching the results come in and seeing Clinton winning. I was like, oh, this is interesting, you know. And then, of course, you go from there to Al Gore, George Bush, you know, all that. So politics always interested me. So voting is something I've always been happy to participate in. Now in 2020, it seems like there's a lot going on in terms of people not being as interested as they should be. I'm not going to get out here and tell you who to vote for. But, you know, if you feel like your voice is not being heard, or that you'd want things to not be the way that they are, you're not happy with things they are, not involving yourself in the political process is a horrible idea. You're not going to make any changes by not involving yourself in the political process. Imagine you're playing in sports, right? Or let's say you're on a basketball team, and you say to yourself, and the game is real tight, real close, and you say to yourself, you know, I'm gonna just quit playing. I'm not gonna play. We'll just figure itself out. That's how politics works. If you don't involve yourself in it, then yes, I agree. You don't have the right to complain, and you can't have the change that you want to see. Every time that you think that your vote doesn't matter, I guarantee there's 10 people who know that their vote matters. Now, once again, I'm black. Sometimes people of color feel that our vote definitely doesn't matter. Like, nothing ever changes. Things are always going to be the same. But one thing I noticed, if you look at politics in the last 30 years or so, you start to see more inclusion in terms of women holding a political office, people of color holding political office. You didn't have that 50 or 60 years ago when black people couldn't vote. But the minute we started being able to vote, you start seeing more of us getting involved in the political process and holding positions of power. So black people say like, oh, you know, my vote doesn't matter and things don't change. I said, look, we're working with the system that has been in place for almost 300 years. And so just in the last 30 years, are we starting to see things slowly start to change? Unfortunately, these things take time. Of course, we want things to happen immediately. You have the Breonna Taylor verdict, which some people are upset about. But like I pointed out on Twitter, everything that happened to her was completely legal. And that's the problem. And so in order to make these changes and make sure stuff like this doesn't happen, we have to involve ourselves in the political process. Sitting out and I'm not doing it, it's all rigged. No, it's not. Trust me. It's definitely not rigged. What it is that the people who you don't think are voting a lot. So... You have to involve yourself in this process. We have no excuse. As people of color, we have no excuse to be politically ignorant. We cannot sit online and look up stupid stuff like Pizzagate and like, oh, this is what's going on, or Wayfair selling refrigerators based off, you know, black women that are missing. Like, we can't do that. Like, do not for 1 minute take advantage of the opportunity in front of you. I'm not even talking about just presidential elections. I'm talking about local. That is one thing that people really don't hang their hat on is local elections. You really want to see change locally? Vote locally. Like, that is where it really starts, in your backyard. Presidential elections, yeah, you can say, like, you know, things don't happen fast enough the way they should. If, you know, Trump wins or if Biden wins, things are not going to automatically just switch to bad in 4 years, whatever. But locally, yeah, things can happen very quickly. The defunded police movement was a big thing during quarantine in the last few months, and Austin elected... Greg Caesar? What's his name?
Cesar,
yeah. And, you know, of course, the APD, the funding, you know, the funding went away or whatever. A whole other topic. But, yes, involve yourself in the process, because that not only is it your right, but it's just something that's the fight. There has to be a fight on both ends. You can fight in the streets as well for change, and it's also the political side of it. You cannot take the political process out of it, because when you don't vote, that's when your voice doesn't matter. That's when they realize, like, yeah, you know, we got to change nothing. They don't vote. So that's my Confucius says.
Boy, was that a good one. That was a good and a timely one at that. I agree wholeheartedly with everything that you said, especially when it comes to voting in state and local elections, especially in the state of Texas, where we literally vote for every single public office. You don't like the judge that's sitting at the Texas Supreme Court? Guess what you can do? You can vote them out. You don't like your district attorney? Guess what you can do? You can vote them out. You don't like your mayor? Guess what you can do? You can vote them out. You don't like the people sitting on the city council? Assuming you know who is sitting on the city council, because a lot of y'all complain about things that happen in the city and don't know who's sitting on the city council or even what voting district you are in. Know those things, but guess what you can do if you don't like them? You can vote them out. This is the world we live in. Like Confucius said, if you really want change or you really want your voice to be heard, vote. If you just want to sit there and you want to be complacent and want things to stay the way that they are, or just sit there and complain about things not changing, then don't vote. Because when you don't vote, I look at it as you don't have a place to complain because you didn't even get out and try to exercise your civil duty. Like, it's a right, and I've, like Confucius said, since a kid, I've always been interested in politics. Like him, my earliest memory of being aware of voting and the importance of voting was the 96 election with Clinton. Fun story, I was on the news for that.
What, in 96?
Yeah, I was.
How old were you?
7. If you were 9, I was 7. My second grade class, we simulated the voting process of Dole and Clinton, and I got to be Clinton, and Clinton won in that election.
Wholeheartedly.
And he won, and then in reality, Clinton won again. So that was my earliest moment with voting and media and press and all that good stuff. But also, I grew up in a house where history was important and history was taught. And black history was important and black history was taught and voting was taught and that you had to go out and vote, that people fought and people died and people were attacked. Why wouldn't you want to get out there and vote? You are letting, I know this is something that as black people, we always hear, but it's true. You are letting all of those people who fought, who got dogs sicked on them, who were sprayed with water hoses, who were bombed just for the right to vote. And y'all sitting up and saying, nah, I don't want to do that. I ain't finna do that, man. You didn't let all those people down. Then what was all that for? Then you don't want to vote. It was for nothing. It literally, you literally are saying, they did it. That everything they did was in vain. I don't want to vote. It don't matter if I vote or not. Like he said, like Confucius said, the presidential election, yeah, man, it take probably more than 4 years for change to really be enacted. So get out there and vote again. If you don't like how something is going, get out there and make your voice. We can do all the rallies and all of that, but like King, he could have did all the rallies and all the marches, but it wasn't going to amount to anything without action and work being put behind it. And what was that action and that work that he did? He was in LBJ's ear every waking moment he got. He was in D.C. He was on the phone with him. Y'all want to enact change? We can get out there and march and pray and hoot and holler, but if we not put no actions further behind that, which would be the voting, then what do you expect to change? What do you expect to come of it? Like he said, everything that happened in the Breonna Taylor case was completely legal. And that's the issue. You got to get out there and vote. You got to be out there and make your voice be heard. Y'all, like he said, APD has been defunded $100 million. Guess what they want to do about it? They want to vote. Because they don't think they should be defunded $100 million about it. If they want to vote for that, why you can't get out there and vote against it?
Exactly.
You want it to happen so bad, why you can't get out there and vote against it?
Yeah, that's how you enact change. Like, you enact change by involving yourself in the process. Like I said, it's a process, too, that, you know, I do believe there's actually a system that is trying to disenfranchise people of color from voting. And there's a reason for that. You know, if they didn't care, trust me, they just let you go ahead and vote. Whatever, do what you got to do. But
we as black people and minorities, we may not have political power, but the powers that be recognize our political influence. We want political power, but we don't necessarily recognize our political influence. Like Confucius was just saying, the infrastructure is trying to keep you from the polls and keep you from casting the ballot because they recognize your influence politically. They recognize it's 44 million black people in America. they recognize that $44 million can do something. It can enact something. It can swing a vote a certain way. So why not get out there and make your voice be heard? Why give them the satisfaction of, ha, I told you they wasn't going to go vote. I told you they wasn't going to do nothing. They just all talk. Why give them the satisfaction? Get out there and let your voice be heard. Voter registration, I believe, ends next week.
Next week, yeah, the 5th, I think.
Yeah, so that's Monday. Monday. Get registered to vote by Monday. And I believe Monday is absolute last day you can register to vote. You can go to the DPS. I go to the DPS for everything else.
Yeah, you can't go to DPS. It's closed because of COVID. You have to make an appointment to get inside there. Trust me, I know. My appointment's in November.
Oh, I forgot. Yeah, COVID. Oh, yeah. Mm,
yeah, you can't just walk into the DPS. I wish. I tried. Trust
me. Well. You can find a VDR or a V. I forgot what it is, but somebody that is registered and has been sworn in who can register you to vote.
Yeah.
So. Yeah.
That is.
All of us in the scene know Mo Jane. Hit up Mo Jane to get registered to vote.
Facts. I was gonna say that. But yeah, vote. You know, like I said, you know, we have a few more shows for the actual election. Like I said, we're not gonna get out here tell you to vote for.
Yeah, nah, we're not doing that.
But yeah, vote. It's important. This is politics is something that is a very important part of your life, whether you want to admit to it or not. So participate in it. And it's not you don't have to participate that much to participate. You just have to vote. So nobody's saying like you need to run for office or you need to go to city council meeting. Like just vote. You need to watch all the debates. I understand
although,
that.
Although,
yes, I know.
No, I'm just saying. Although, if you really want to be the change you want to see in the world, why not run for office?
And register to vote at votetexas.gov.
There you go.
The Breaks Podcast is a production of KTX 989, the Austin Music Experience. You can listen to The Breaks show live every Saturday night from 10 p.m. to 1 a.m. Please subscribe, rate, and review this podcast on iTunes or wherever you get your podcasts. This podcast is produced by Confucius Jones, Fresh Knight, and Elizabeth McQueen. You can follow us on Instagram and Twitter. We are at The Breaks KUTX, and you can find more episodes at KUTX.org/The Breaks.
Our theme music was written and performed by Austin's own DZ Brown.